Thank you, Tom.
As the title, I have global warming. This Sunday, I was hiking around here up in the mountains, and I was with a doctor from Nebraska, and I mentioned I was going to be speaking about this, and he said, global warming is just a government conspiracy. They fund your research. They want you to say certain things. And I spent 3 hours on the trail with him, and he never wavered. So if you're one of those, you'll have to bear with me on this talk. Okay, I'm going to talk about what I think is global warming. Obviously, being a plant scientist, we know how important CO2 is, and based on reconstruction from ice cores and the Greenland ice glaciers, you can see how the CO2 is, it does cycle. But if you look as of last month, the latest was 414 parts per million carbon dioxide. When I started research in the early 80s, it was like 305 or something. So it's obviously climbing higher than it ever has in the last 400,000 years. A number of places are monitoring the world global temperature, and some people, say, it's only U.S., but if you look at all these particular institutes, they're all showing an increase since 1980, and then another way of looking at it is the global temperature since the last 100 years or so, and once again, since about 1980, it's been up and going up and up. If we look where, this is just 2017 in relation to the previous 30 years, you can see the area, the U.S., obviously, we've been 4 degrees Fahrenheit above normal that particular year, and obviously our temperate fruit production is in this area, and of course it's part of Europe and other areas, so obviously it's getting warm where we produce temperate fruit. Last 5 years have been the hottest on record since we've been keeping temperatures. Once again, doesn't bode well. And this past June, these are a number of events that were records between melting ice and high temperatures, and they all lead to one thing. This is the hottest June ever on record. So we are hot, and we're getting hotter, it appears to be. I work in the Southeast, and I work for the peach industry, and this is just an indication the last 3 years we've had problems with lack of chill. This is just headlines from the different newspapers. But what comes down to warm winters mean few peaches, because our type of system, the type of varieties we grow and how we treat them cannot tolerate these warm winters without loss of production. Something Greg Lang did when he was doing his graduate work in Davis, nice little graph, but it shows endodormancy has been an issue with us. Obviously, we call chilling units or chilling hours. We rate different varieties, genotypes, because some need more chill than others, but we need to get, each variety needs to attain the level of chilling to come out of the deep dormancy or endodormancy. In 2017, we had a lot of loss of crop due to low chill in South Carolina. Contender is one of our high chill varieties. It's always dependable because it blooms late. This is a mature tree, and you can see there's not very much foliage coming out. We have a lot of blind wood. This tree did recover, but a young orchard, this particular row here is all contender, all those trees died. So not only you lose production, you lose young trees when you have insufficient chilling. Some of the symptoms, once again, you get a lot of vegetative buds that abort, that do not come out, flowers abort. When flowers do set, these tend to button, they don't fertilize. You lose a crop, and you have a lot of pruning to do to try to reinvigorate the tree back. When you do get fruit production, it's often very limited. It's small. You get a lot of buttons. You got lots of blind wood. Obviously, very non-productive. So lack of chilling is a big issue with us now. Another thing that warm temperatures do is if you do have enough chilling, when we have high temperatures at bloom or post-bloom, it significantly affects our potential for a fruit set and size. And we've witnessed that a good bit in what we call the eco-dormancy. Once you come out of dormancy with having sufficient, if you have sufficient chill, we're very minimal chill. We do have issues if we have warm temperatures during bloom and fruit set. This was some work done in Japan that illustrates for fruit set and peach, you really, if you have very high temperatures, higher temperatures, the lower the fruit set you get. And also, another thing we know is if the buds are not chilled quite adequately, they're what I call marginally chilled, they become even more susceptible to high bloom temperatures. So we've had winters where we just barely had enough chill, but then we got very hot during bloom and we had very low set. And once again, another example is same study. Well, these were in controlled, trees were in controlled settings where it was average these temperatures. When, if you had average temperatures of 20 C and up, you got pollen tube growth was very slow and you got very low fertilization. But when it was cooler or in the orchard where you had diurnal temperatures, you actually see the amount of, we did get a wide end, but they get good pollen tube growth instead. So once again, high temperatures, you have no fertilization. And we've been very hot early in the season in the last 10 years. Okay, after if you do get fruit set, the other thing is early spring temperature does have a very significant impact on fruit size. And I work with the industry, and if we don't have a minimum size, we can't sell the fruit during that market window. And that's a very key part with our industry is having fruit size. This work was done in Davis. Rate of fruit development is strongly influenced by temperature or heat accumulation the first 30 days after bloom, and that's what we use for all of our modeling of when we're going to thin. I won't have time to go over that in this talk. When spring temperature is very warm, the fruit develops very fast, faster than the tree supply, the resources can support the relative growth rate, and that's because the first 30 days a peach tree uses reserves because the leaves come out after bloom. And so the leaves don't become a positive net CO2 accumulator until about 30, 40 days after bloom. So it's very important that first 30 days, if it's very hot, you're burning up your energy, stored energy. And what happens is that if you don't do something about that by reducing crop load, you end up with smaller fruit. You can give it all the water you want, but that first 30 days is very critical as far as your final fruit size. Okay, so some of the things that we've found with our situation with low chilling winters. Peach buds require more heat to initiate bud break if they're inadequately chilled. Well, so well, you have more heat than you think that's a good thing. But what it does is it extends the bloom period, and the longer you extend the bloom period, the more likely you're going to have poor set. Then on the other end, if you have low chill cultivars that do get that minimum chill is good enough, they bloom much earlier, and then you have a much more increase the frost risk. And that's what's happened too the last 4 years with the low chill cultivars. Poor leaf bud break and defective flowers, all that is common when we're marginal and chilling or having inadequate chilling. Makes it tough to do a thinning decision because you don't know if the fruit's going to set or not, and it makes it very difficult to make a wise decision on thinning. And which I've showed on that slide, the work done in Japan, marginally chilled flower buds are very sensitive to effects of hot weather. So if we get through the winter with just marginal chill and it gets very hot during bloom, those flowers cannot take that and they abort and we get a very low set. All right, so how will growers adapt? What we're trying to do is adopt and refine predictive models, weather models to time beneficial cultural practices like using hydrogen cyanamide and other types of compounds to get the trees out of dormancy. We're also modifying our existing orchard protocols and we prune a certain way, but if we know we're going to be inadequate chilling, we change our what we do prune, and once again, I won't have time to go over that, but we've been doing that the last few years on low chill winters. We could change out our higher chill cultivars. There is a risk with that. We go lower chill, they bloom earlier, and we still get spring freezes. So that's one trade-off if we do go that route. And the other, lastly, which I'll talk briefly about, is develop new cultivars that are adapted to this warming climate. And I'll get into that in a few minutes. Most of you are aware of chill hours and chill units. Our most models that our growers were using and were based on chill hours, whether it's just below 7C or between 0 and 7. Utah model came into effect in the 70s to use units to try to handle negation from heat. It does not work in the southeast, but very well. But the model that I've been using, which has been around for 30 years, is chill portions. It normally was used in tropical, subtropical areas, but I find it's working very well with our type of winters in the southeast, and I will talk about that briefly. This is chill units where there's a different level of, is assigned for depending on the temperature. Well, Weinberger hours, chill hours are just below 45 Fahrenheit, and then between 32 and 45 is the improved. But chill hours do not factor in a negation from high winter temperatures, so nor high quality chilling. You don't necessarily, there's high quality chilling that's missed in these type of models. So give an example of some data that I got from Dick Oakey. If you look, this is the difference between chill hours and units in a particular year. We can have a difference of 280 units between hours and units in a particular year, or as little as 10. That's just too inconsistent to use. So if you have two different models, hours and units, you'll know which one's going to be the best one to use. I went back on the data the last 30 years, and this is what I recommend that if you're going to use that is, if we have colder than normal, what's normal anymore? In winters, we tend to accumulate more chill hours. If we're warmer than normal, we tend to favor high chill unit accumulation. In normal winters, we tend to minimize the differences. But what is normal? And once again, I don't think that's the best way to go about it. So we're looking at chill portions. In California, in 2016, 17, and 13, 14, those two winters were very low chill. And I've circled, usually we use February 15th as we need our chilling by then. Sometimes you can go as late as end of February. Both these cases, nothing was over 900 for these two winters. But August Lady, which is a predominant variety there, as well as in the southeast, has more than 900, is estimated to have more than 900 chill hours. It cropped normally both years in California. It has not cropped with us in those type of situations with those chill hours. So something else must be going on. So we looked at chill portions, that those two particular years, and we're in the mid-50s, those two low years, and up near 60 if we got to the end of the month. Well, we know August Lady cropped that year at 900 chill hours. So obviously, according to the chill portions, it's probably somewhere around 50 to 55. And so based on that, and I'll give you another example, previous year, if you look, I'm trying to find the arrow. Okay, well, I'll point it out.
Like 1 week from Christmas, it was very cold. Very warm. So we had no chill hours, but we did have some chill units. The following week was very cold, and we had 24 each day chill hours. And we had a fair amount of chill units. But they didn't really match up very well. But when we looked at chill portions, we got four in that week where it was very, very warm, and it was very cold, we had 4.2. This sort of did a much better job of getting an idea of what the tree was getting versus looking at 1 week it's extremely warm and 1 week it's extremely cold. So and you can see the difference between units at that point in time and hours were almost 200. But portions were about what we would expect at that time. So
chill portions worked very well for that winter, and it didn't allow us to make a good decision come February. So based on all that, looking at the data that we've had, I've sort of come up with this, and this needs refined, but I'm using this with our growers. I'm asking them to use chill portions in their media stations, and so far I think we're in that ballpark if we use that. Okay, predicting, what are we going to get? I often look at, well, every year we look at what the NOAA puts out with the, or we're going to have La Nina or an El Nino. They make a big difference in our winters, at least in the southeast. Then you look at their forecast, whether we're going to have one or the other or neutral. And we use that information to go in. We look at the 90-day forecast as well as the 30-day forecast. And normally by January, mid-January, we need to make a decision if we're going to use hydrants on anemone or adjust our pruning practices and what have you. But we need a forecast, and we've been using, of course, what's available. You go online, there's a number of predictors. For some reason, I can't get the arrow. Oh, there it is. It was hiding. Okay. If you look here, if you go to some of these sites, they'll show current accumulation, historic average was in yellow, and then last season was in blue. At this particular date, around January 6th or so, I looked where we were at this location, which is where our peach industry is, and what the projection for a neutral and green. This was for a neutral projection, not an El Nino year. So from that, I know February 1 is critical if we're going to apply hydrants to anemone, and I know February 15th we have to have our chilling by then. So if we follow within the center of that projection, we'll be okay. We'll be over 1,000 hours. If we get on the low end of it, we're going to be marginal for some real high chill. Or if we did what we did the previous year, if it flattens out, then we're going to be in a lot of trouble. With our mid and late high chill varieties. So we use this to, I try to use this to work with our industry to decide, you know, what to look forward to and whether how we need to change our practices. Obviously, Dormix is a very specific one to use. For us, we know we need to, For us, we need to know when to use it. When this is the autumn flame, so it's 600 chill hours, it's a low chill. When you start seeing yellow in the anthers, we know that it's too late. If you put a hydrogen cyanamide at that point, these particular buds would die. So at this particular stage on February 6th, we are okay. That variety did not need it, hydrogen cyanamide. But when we look at something mid-chill, 800, we have about half of the buds aren't there yet, half are. You have to make a decision, do you want to use it or not, because you will kill some of these buds. And then if you look at something that's very high chill, like Contender, all throughout the tree, there's nothing that's thrown any color. So it obviously needs some type of help, and either it's hydrogen cyanamide or using fertilizers and other means that we use, like calcium and potassium nitrate. Okay, I won't go through all these, but these are management practices we're using now for inadequate chilling winter. The point I want to make about these, none of them are 100% effective. They're not even close. They help somewhat. We try, hopefully, to help enough that we at least have a viable, marketable crop. But really, we need a better solution. And in the past, cultivar selection was went from Alberta, which was low-colored, medium-sized, to really now we produce very large red fruit. And then we went white flesh from Georgia Bale, which is very soft. You know, we were able to get large, nice, high-colored, firm fruit. That's what we've done in the past. Now, looking at disease resistance, but more important, we need to look at selections for a warmer type of climate. And so what we've been doing at Clemson a lot of molecular work for almost, since I've been there, I've been there more than 30 years, but we started about 25, 28 years ago. We know bloom timing has three determinants, not just chill requirement, we've got heat requirement. And that's something we sort of don't think about, but it's very important. And of course, your weather you have to deal with, and that's where we do the forecasting, what we think we're going to get. There we are. Once again, right now we're saying this is a typical variety, the chill requirement is about equal to heat requirement. We know that's not quite true. There will be a paper coming out soon, hopefully, to show this. This is some work that some of our postdocs and students, we all worked on it, but the EVG locust was a mutant that we found that the ever-growing peach never went dormant. So we worked that area pretty well, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And the point is, I guess, is bloom date and chilling requirement are very tightly linked in this area. In this area, there's a number of MADSPOX genes that control dormancy and coming out of dormancy. I started a minute late now.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, these DAM expression genes, they show that they decline with chill exposure, and their low expression coincides with bud break potential. These three varieties listed here, Spring Prince is a very low chill, Ruby Prince is medium chill, and Contender is high chill, and it's very consistent. I don't have the vegetative buds up. They show the same type of thing. So when they are when their expression is almost zero, that's when the tree's ready to start taking heat requirement and whatever it needs to bloom. Summary: what I just mentioned is these genes appear to have a role in dormancy entrance and dormancy release, and they're very tightly linked with chilling requirement. There's work being done on it right now. I won't have time to talk about that, but that's important to know. So can heat requirement be manipulated? Can we breed for a lower chilling without earlier bloom? We want to satisfy chilling requirement in low chill years, but we want to avoid the frost risk by delaying flowering by incorporating a high heat requirement in these lower chilling varieties. So we want to put more weight on the heat requirement so that, you know, we can handle the low chilling, but we don't bloom right away, and that's very important. Typically, people are using a base temperature of 4 or 7 degrees C. I'm going to show why that's not the way to go, or why you think it's not going to work. This is some work that hasn't been submitted, I suppose. It hasn't been published yet, but Well, these were 52 different genotypes that were looked at what their base temperature really was. And what we found, or what Dr. Bielenberg found, is that, I'll go back to it. I guess I'll give you a minute to go over it. If you're on the left or on the right, you can see the estimated base temperature, and it ranges anywhere from 9 to 1, or actually 0, as far as when what temperature they start accumulating heat. And then if you go to the right, it's how much is needed. So really, people, ones that have a high base temperature really don't need as much heat. So all peaches do not share the same growing degree hour and base temperature for bloom. We are on an assumption that peach or any tree would have, species would have very similar, but we found a lot of variation. So obviously, that's good and bad. The good part is we can find the ones that require a lot of heat requirement and try to incorporate those genes or those alleles into our breeding program. As I mentioned, they're both variant or negatively correlated. And one of the problems with the models that we use now, assumptions, is that chilling alter, or off target, because chilling does alter heat requirement based on the work I just showed you. And simultaneously, both chilling and heat accumulation can occur at the same time, so that makes it a little bit more complex trying to filter it out. And then recently, this paper just came out, the carbohydrate temperature hypothesis. Basically, it's saying that soluble carbohydrate consumption is a good indication of when a tree will bloom. I won't go through all this data, but it works with peach, it works with almond. And basically, we got to integrate chilling and heat requirements with possibly this carbohydrate metabolism using our current genomic tools, that maybe we can find a more effective way to develop tree fruit or temperate fruit cultivars that will be adapted to a warming climate. Lower chill but higher heat requirement and not such quick consumption of soluble carbohydrates. That's a lot in a short period of time. And for all you want to go over to Death Valley, you're not chewing out there, that's for sure. It's quite hot there. Okay. Sorry to go fast. There's just so much to cover. Thank you. Education.